Welcome back to Assembly Conversations. Your host tonight is Libby Fitzgerald. Our topic tonight is transportation, the dire condition of many of our roads and bridges throughout Virginia, and the pressing need for new roads in congested areas of the state, as well as rail needs, and the dilemma of where to find the money to meet those needs with a budget deficit looming and localities living in fear that the state might end up cutting their education and public safety net money in order to fund transportation. My guests are Delegate Vivian Watts from Fairfax County, a Democrat and former Secretary of Transportation under Governor Beliles, and Delegate Joe May, the current Republican Chairman of the House Transportation Committee. We welcome bringing our listeners into the conversation tonight, so we look forward to your calls with questions and comments. You can reach us at 866-611-NEWS. That's 866-611-6397. Before the break, I asked you what you thought the chances would be in light of the fact that so many Republicans in the legislature have taken a no-tax pledge of getting any sort of rise in the gas tax through the legislature. And Delegate Watts, you wanted to reply to that.
Yes. Having been around a while, I am realistic, and I'm afraid that Joe's assessment is on point. But I wanted to respond on two bases. One, I am deeply concerned about a patchwork approach. Because we talked about the need for maintenance, we talked about the congestion problems, we talked about all the local streets and highways, we talked about transit. Each one of those are very serious needs after 25 years of no state investment. That what you have to, if we do just one, it takes 51% of the vote to pass anything. And so if we aren't all realizing the need that has to be met, if we don't all hang together, we will indeed hang separately. One of the problems that we have is over the last decade, construction money, remember I said, and oh, it's been since 2008 that localities have seen local street construction money. That's because all the money has been going to maintenance for the last decade, so that the rest of the state outside the urban crescent and some of the growth suburbs hasn't seen the magnitude of the problem until relatively recently. So I become very concerned. And that then is my second answer, is that it's not meant to be advertisement. It's meant to be a listening or a source of information. I put together at the beginning of this session a PowerPoint. It has 20 different slides on it, trying my darndest to get to some of the information that you've been asking tonight, Libby, and put it on an accessible format, all the while saying I'll update it in every way possible if I'm at all inaccurate. So at VivianWatts.com, there's a link to this, and I would urge your listeners to link onto it, download it, use it, in any way to just get this body of understanding of the magnitude of the problem out there, where people know what has to be done to continue to invest in Virginia.
Well, you're right that it is a bit complicated and difficult to understand. So any sort of tool we can use to understand it better is for the better of the citizenry, I guess, mm-hmm. to understand this issue. Let me just ask you.
I wonder if I might just interrupt a minute.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
This really isn't a partisan problem, and it didn't just happen the last 2 years or even the last 5 years. It's actually happened over the last 12, 15 or more years, and it's gradually got a little worse, and it is not so that we haven't done anything. It's just that in Virginia, we never rush into things, and what we've done hasn't been sufficient. In 2007, we actually were able to get together some legislation which raised some additional funds. It wasn't enough, but it was at least some. Then last year, we actually found some additional funding. It still wasn't enough, but we are, in the Virginia style, we are making some progress.
I think I saw you quoted, Joe, as saying, in Virginia, we do not do things quickly.
That's actually something that I mostly like about yeah. serving in Virginia. Occasionally it's, mm-hmm. it's frustrating, but it's not for lack of good people trying.
But Libby, when you talk about what we did last year, was commit to $2 billion worth of borrowing. Now, it sounds fine. We did
raise $275 million of otherwise unencumbered money.
That would be true, and I will be more generous than that. I will say there was actually plans for $4 billion of borrowing. We'll be lucky if we see $3 billion, and $2 billion of that is in 25-year bonds. So while you may shovel some dirt with that $2 billion, the next five governors are going to have to pay off the cash, so it doesn't draw down what the magnitude of need is, and what we've done is 80% of our borrowing stream has all been used in just these 3 years with a payback of 25 years. We've never done transportation bonds on a 25-year basis. Little bit like what we got into in the subprime mortgages, where rather than the 10-year bond that we have done, we're now at a 25-year bond, which has cost 40% more to pay off than the original bond sale was.
We have a large number of calls waiting here, so I want to get to them in just a second. But just quickly, let me ask you, since the gas tax is controversial, to say the least, in the legislature, there are those who say the gas tax is an unsustainable source of revenue, that it's only a stopgap measure. And many states, in fact, are seeing declines in their gas tax revenues. Does this play into your thinking on this at all?
Yeah, the gas tax.
People also call it a regressive tax. What do they mean by that?
I'll stay away from the regressive discussion and just say, yep, you're right. It is a decreasing source of revenue, and that was one of the reasons I introduced the pump toll bill, because it takes into account that a number of the vehicles that are out there right now don't burn gasoline or don't burn diesel fuel, and as a result, they don't pay any gas tax. So we're going to have to look at it a different way, and I'm looking at it from a energy fill-up, if you will, because the electric cars in particular don't use a drop of gasoline, so you'll never get any revenues from them. But overall, we're making some progress. The Virginia way is not to rush into things. And I must admit, we're being true to our form here.
Yes, I think many people would agree with you on that. All right, we've got some folks here who want to join the discussion. John from Charlottesville, you're on the air. Thank you so much for being patient and waiting. Hello, are you there?
My pleasure, and thank you to the service of the people speaking tonight. I grew up in Fairfax County, and I now live in Albemarle County, just outside of Charlottesville, Virginia. I consider myself a refugee, with no disparagement towards that term, towards people who truly are across the world. But I use that term because when I was a kid, the woods I played in, the stream I caught crayfish in, became paved over by Route 66, and that was going to be the transportation hallelujah. And anybody who tries to get out west towards my way from D.C., where my mother still lives, can tell you that that obviously did not work. So I am interested in corroborating that statement that this is an interconnected human problem. To me, the root of transportation problems are in land use problems. Northern Virginia is highly overpopulated. It's highly overdeveloped. Some folks made some money on that, obviously, but they sure didn't give it to the state of Virginia or the Commonwealth to improve our transportation. So that was, you know, the taxpayers get, held in the bag. And the evidence of that is you look at the stream health in Fairfax County, for example, over 80% of the streams are highly impaired by Virginia Department of Environmental Quality standards that our own Commonwealth shares. So I think the madness has to stop with, again, overpopulation, overdevelopment, which then obviously lead to transportation problems. And to me, in some ways, it's the ultimate bailout. Here in Charlottesville, with the proposed Western Bypass, folks built along what was a thoroughfare called Route 29, and now everybody's crying, oh, there's too much traffic, there's too many stoplights. Now we got to get past it with people paying the money for that, which aren't the people who reap the money from the overdevelopment in the first place. So I think, first of all, across the Commonwealth, even in rural areas. Somebody's got to stop the madness of this overdevelopment.
John, thank you so much for your thoughts. Delegate Watts, I'm sure you have some thoughts on that.
I have. I have some handy statistics. Since 1986, the last 25 years, population in the Commonwealth has gone up 38%. Now, the number of registered vehicles has gone up 60%. So there's a lot of folks with two-car families that weren't there 25 years ago. And licensed drivers have only gone up 40%, just a little bit more than population. But in the meantime, the number of lane miles, the actual lanes of travel, has gone up less than 10%. Now, again, the good news in all of this is that transit has gone up more than 65%. So you do have more and more efforts to get more people into fewer vehicles. But for the last 30, 40 years, as the active citizen that I was, every projection I've ever seen about population, unfortunately, has come true. And so not to plan for it, not to concentrate it, I couldn't agree more that we need coordination of transportation and land use. And that was one of the things that was a major accomplishment of the 2007 special session. But even with all that concentration, you still have to provide the appropriate infrastructure.
Delegate May, you've got a comment on that.
Yeah, I sure do, because transportation used to be considered, we'll build a couple roads without regard to what they do or how well they work, we'll declare victory and desert the field. That's no longer the situation. Northern Virginia couldn't be a better example of where we haven't done anywhere near enough transportation planning. Do you use cars? Do you use buses? Do you use light rail? Do you use bicycles? Do you use pedestrian paths? And we're just finally getting started on looking at it from a system standpoint. And some of our colleagues are pretty slow to acknowledge that, hey, we're going to have to do more planning. So when John from Charlottesville mentioned Route 66 being the end-all to be-all, that's an excellent example of what I'm talking about.
Uh-huh. Okay, well, thank you. Now we have another call from Glenn from Patrick County. I believe it's about raising the gas tax, which we were just speaking about. So, Glenn, you're on the air.
Thank you, and again, thank you all for your service to the Commonwealth. I'm going to speak as a citizen of a rural county in southwest Virginia, but also as somebody that's involved in local economic development issues. I myself am a private business person and own a couple of tractor trailers and several other vehicles that travel up and down the East Coast. And I've noticed that the taxes in Virginia are much lower than those in surrounding states. And when I, for one, file my IFTA taxes for my tractor trailers, I feel that I'm getting a really good bargain in Virginia, but when I think about our roads,
I know you're happy
state,
about that. But
excuse me.
Yes, I that's a good point. It's beneficial to you, but in the big picture, Virginia is coming up short. go on. I'm sorry.
And quite frankly, I've always felt that our gas taxes and fuel taxes in Virginia have been low. They need to be raised. We are giving money away by the bucketful to our neighboring states, especially when it comes in terms of over-the-road trucks that are simply using our state thoroughfares like 81, 85, and 95, and 66. We need to put the burden on the gas tax, possibly on raising registration fees also on vehicles in Virginia. But most of the burden should be taken up in the gas tax.
Thank you, Glenn. Glenn makes some good points about the benefit to raising the gas tax. Delegate May, do you agree with any of those?
Yeah, but we can't just raise the gas tax. As we were saying, mm-hmm. It's a declining quantity. And, I've co-signed or was co-patent, co-patroned a bill submitted by Vivian, I guess, last year that would have raised the gas tax.
Now, I guess the question is, are you going to be able to bring the Republican caucus behind you with this?
We're in a transitional period now in which I guess several years ago, I would not have expected to hear anything along that line, and I'm hearing it from both sides of the aisle. It really isn't a partisan issue anymore. It's one of we're truly concerned about the Commonwealth, and I think there is an increasing number of people who are willing to do whatever it is that they need
Despite the fact that they've taken no tax pledges.
I haven't taken any no
tax pledges. Not you, but so many have. So would that be a problem?
That's actually a decreasing number. It's never been a comfortable issue with me, and I certainly won't be critical of my colleagues. By the way, there's some on Vivian's side that have taken the same pledge.
I'll have to find out which. I'm not sure of that. But what I wanted to come in on,
yes,
with real world experience, like Glenn just expressed, it is absolutely critical in how we go about making our decisions. Again, he spoke volumes in what he said, again, from the real world, and add to that with what he was saying, that investing in Virginia's infrastructure, investing in the infrastructure of the areas of the state where revenue can support, the general fund revenue can support areas like Martinsville and Clark County and so on, and be able then to keep our vitality that we have, but without the addressing the fact that Northern Virginia is number one in the nation for congestion, we're going to end up losing that revenue and jobs, and that causes a great concern of how we approach what we've got to do.
Okay, we've got another caller. We have lots of interested folks tonight. There's Caroline from Charlottesville who would like to speak, I believe, to funding the Charlottesville bypass. Caroline, welcome to Assembly Conversations. You're on the air.
Hello, and thank you for having me on the air. I'm so impressed with how knowledgeable your panel is. And I want to bring everybody's attention to the issue of the Charlottesville bypass. The first thing, of course, is that the state does not have money, and so the money will be borrowed. The second point about the Charlottesville bypass is that VDOT's own studies show that after we build the bypass, 29 will still have a grade of F because 90% of the traffic is local. And then the third point about the Charlottesville bypass is that the design is 20 years old, and it's going to dump the traffic in the middle of the growth area. So I just don't understand how our state officials are going through with this project. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Caroline. Delegate May, do you want to speak to that?
Not much to be said. I haven't seen the final plan, nor do I think that we are at a final decision point, but those are some of the juggling acts that we have to do. There are those who argue that the Charlottesville bypass is a vital link in our economic development chain that runs from
north
to south. Strangely, my daughter and her family live right adjacent to it, and I know that my wife would be delighted when she goes to visit them to use it.
Yeah, for those parts of the state that did not get an interstate, you know, 29 has been, as you say, a vital artery for north-south, for commercial traffic as well as regular traffic.
The concern that it raises for me is that I would be so much more comfortable if we had the funding stream that funded primary roads like the Charlottesville bypass, secondary roads, and urban roads in cities that went through the funding formula so that you had more direct involvement of all of the populace of the localities where this money flows. That when we instead, out of desperation, fund a few major projects at the top, priority projects at the top, we lose that connection with the local involvement in how you go about the design issues. And more, when as we've had less and less monies, the solution is, well, let's do a few priority projects. And it tends to be done just at the top level, travel from the Commonwealth Transportation Board.
Okay. We have Mike from Orange who would like to join the conversation as well. Mike, you're on the air. Thanks for waiting.
I am. Thank you. I would like to bring to your all's attention and the listener's attention. You all, I'm sure, are aware of the cost of the Chesapeake Bay cleanup, billions of dollars. Researchers estimate that approximately 30% additional load of nutrients are going into the bay than what is now known in the modeling due to nitrous oxides that are emitted by cars on highways. And so we've been doing some work in Central Virginia looking at this issue and trying to push the cost of the bay restoration upstream so that taxpayers do not have to inappropriately foot the bill for bay restoration if they are not driving those cars that's producing that 30% additional load. Approximately 100 pounds per mile of nitrogen is being deposited onto the sides of highways in a several, about a mile or less depositional area. You all probably know that the cost for stormwater treatment is very high, and it can range $10,000 to $20,000 to $30,000 per pound. So conservatively, at $10,000 per pound, that means that we would be pushing the cost of bay cleanup onto taxpayers who are not using the roads to the tune of around $1 million per mile. Earlier in the conversation, I applaud, I think one or both of you all were using the term systems thinking or systems engineering, and I see more and more people talking that way. I would encourage you all to continue your discussion in terms of thinking about a gas tax, which I support, but I agree that I think that it may be diminishing in the future. And also look at the use of surgical tolling. A toll would be a way, I think, to get much greater fairness and to help to look at ecosystem restoration, particular bay restoration, in a more market-oriented sense, and where we would match up those that are actually causing the bay problem with a tool that helps to generate revenue to offset that impact.
Okay, Mike, thank you so much. Let me let my guests make a comment or two on that. And wonderful thoughts. Thank you so much.
I think all of Mike's thoughts are definitely things that we need to be dealing with, and I'm going to add one more to the list. Whenever we build the corridors, whether it's the 95 hot lanes that are now being proposed on into Fredericksburg, or whether we're talking about the I-66 example of an earlier corridor, of an earlier caller, we have to spend the money for the park and ride lots or park and ride garages so that you're able to bring express buses, carpools, slug lanes, so that you're using the fewest number of vehicles and all of the pollutants that Mike was referring to. But again, that takes investment, that takes money to provide that facility and the road network feeding into that facility so you can efficiently use these long corridors, these urban corridors without increasing with the minimal increases in pollution.
And what you're talking about here really is transportation system engineering.
Yes.
And we are starting to do some of that. With regards to the tolls, we're already tolling, and it's not very surgical.
No.
In fact, there are some pretty large tolling situations being generated because that's one of the few places that we can actually raise transportation funds and correlate it with product received.
Mm-hmm.
You use the tunnel, you pay your toll. You use the hot lane, you pay your toll. And somehow or another, that seems to sit well with most people.
Mm-hmm. Let me ask you, Delegate Lacey Putney from the Bedford area proposed as an option for raising new revenue an increase, as you know, in the sales tax by 1%.
Mm-hmm.
So an item costing $1.05 would cost $1.06. He estimated that would generate about $1 billion per year, half of which he would have allocated to transportation, half to education and human services. Now, of course, it was killed in the House Finance Committee. He's a conservative, so it was pretty surprising that he proposed a tax of any kind. But there were people who called him courageous for recognizing the need to do this, to provide the services that people expect of government. What are your thoughts on that versus the gasoline tax? Again, we throw this term out regressive frequently. Would you call either or both of them regressive, and how would you compare them?
I thought Delegate Putney's move was an incredible statesmanship. He is the longest-serving member of a state legislature in the nation
anywhere, as
of this year. Anywhere.
Probably anywhere.
And the reason why it's so significant that Delegate Putney did this is that he is chairman of the Appropriations Committee. He's dealt with the problems of mental health funding, of intellectually disabled. He's dealt with some of our veteran services, our K through 12, our environmental needs, and the list goes on as we don't fill judgeships and caseloads back up, et cetera. He knows how much we have cut in the last 5 or 6 years and how serious a situation is. So for him to step in and say, you don't take transportation money from these resources, in fact, we need to supplement the resources, tremendous statesmanship. And what I also applaud is that that magnitude, the half-cent sales tax, is of the magnitude that we need to be talking about. It's not a little bit here and there. So that that is definitely something that we need to be exploring as the ultimate combination of what we end up with, of having the significant funding to meet the magnitude of needs that we have across the state.
But it's been killed for now. So
yes, but it, putting it forward makes it part of the dialogue.
Uh-huh. So how do you view it,
no,
Delegate May?
I agree.
Uh-huh.
The bills that we were talking about are not nuisance bills or public relations bills. Delegate Putney put a lot of his reputation on the line mm-hmm. to submit that because that was a dead serious bill.
Mm-hmm.
What Vivian introduced is a dead serious bill. I mean, it would raise real money, it would be sustained, and you run a certain amount of political risk when you put those in. I'm dead serious about the pump toll bill, and yes, there is some risk associated with it, but I think it's worth it, and I believe that Vivian believes mm-hmm. that, and uh-huh. so
definitely.
Does Lacey.
Unfortunately, our time is running out here, and I did want to talk to you about the Virginia tax code because, again, there are people who say that reform of the Virginia tax code is really the only long-term solution to this crisis. Unfortunately, we do not have time to get into that. Also wanted to talk about rail service and regional trains. That's another piece mm-hmm. of the transportation puzzle. The Congress in Washington, I think, is requiring the Commonwealth now to come up with their portion of the funding to keep them operating. So that's another piece of the funding that needs to be provided, squeezed out from somewhere. Lots of things we could have gotten to, and unfortunately we're not going to get to them tonight. But thank you so much for your insights. Our time is about up. I do want to thank both of you, Delegates Vivian Watts and Joe May, for taking time away from your heavy workload here in Richmond to be with me tonight. We wish you best of luck in solving these tough issues that you face, particularly transportation. Thanks also to Fred Eccles, Jerry Caldwell, Charlie Perkinson, and John Valentine for their technical help tonight. And finally, thanks to our fine listeners for your good questions. I hope you'll join us again next week at the same time for Assembly Conversations, when the topic will be public safety and law enforcement issues. This program can be found online at virginiapublicradio.org. I'm Libby Fitzgerald. Good night.
Assembly Conversations on Virginia Public Radio is underwritten by the Virginia Education Association, the men and women working in Virginia's public schools. VEA, teaching, learning, leading. Online at veanea.org. And by listeners of this Virginia Public Radio member station. Listeners can hear this program again or access other Virginia Public Radio news content at virginiapublicradio.org. This is Virginia Public Radio.